Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another Wildlife Outdoors podcast. Today is actually going to be a podcast first. It's our first official episode revolving around hunting. And specifically, we're going to be talking about dove hunting, as that's probably what most folks are going to be doing here pretty soon around the country. At least I know here in Texas. And today we're joined by a longtime friend of mine. We go back to our undergrad days in Kingsville, and he's one of the most fishy guys I know. Probably could catch a fish out of a puddle. Probably also one of the best shots I've ever seen when it comes to a scatter gun. And yeah, man, thanks for joining us, Kanoel. His name is Aaron Kanoel. I'm so used to calling him Kanoel. My apologies, but thanks for joining us, man. Glad to have you.
Absolutely, I'm excited. Thanks for inviting me on over.
Of course, of course. So you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what you mainly like to do on your free time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so like Jose mentioned, he calls me Kanoel, which is my last name. My first name is Aaron, and from Texas, South Texas originally, down in McAllen, Edinburgh area, Hidalgo County. Full-time, I am a law enforcement officer. Started out with the United States Border Patrol back in 2016, and just recently, back in January, transferred over to Aaron Marine Operations. So now I'm down in Port Isabel as a marine interdiction agent. And, now it's, my free time, just try to hunt and fish as much as I can. Even though now I'm on the water about 5 days out of the week, with work. Some people say, you get out there and you're out there every day, you don't want to get back on the water after you do it for a living,
Yeah.
But that ain't the case here. And every chance I get, back on the water, go fishing or go duck hunting. My three brothers and I, we're big outdoorsmen, big into the outdoors. It's, dove hunting, fishing, and ducking. That's our main thing right there.
That's
every
awesome.
Chance we get.
So is that something you grew up doing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That was, ever since I can remember, there's some photos, my dad's got me and I'm still in diapers. I'm sure I was before I was one year old. That was, something I grew up doing. If we weren't hunting or fishing, we were playing baseball. And as soon as baseball was done with, it was right back to it every weekend. There were times where, dad dropped me off at school on a Friday and he'd tell me, hey, be ready. Cause as soon as we get here, we're gone. And I said, all right. And I knew what that meant. So we were either going hunting or fishing. And so he'd show up, with the boat behind the truck and jump in the truck and we'd be gone for the weekend, And fortunately we had some friends who had, places down in Arroyo City and we'd be able to spend the weekend out there and put the boat in the water and pull it into their slips at their houses and spend the weekend out there and fish, as often as we could.
That was awesome.
Something I grew up doing, kept me out of a lot of trouble. That is, it taught me a lot. But one thing it did was it kept me out of a lot of trouble. That was, cause as I got older and, was able to make my own money and spend my own money. I was making money just so I could go hunt and fish,
That's
all I was spending my money on, really. Even today, it's like that, that paycheck comes in. It's like, I guess the house is a little more important.
Right. You got to set your priorities, but some of it's still going to hunt and fish and stuff.
Exactly.
That's awesome, man.
Exactly.
So if you had to pick one way to recreate for ever, what would you prefer to do, fish or hunt?
Oh, man. It'd probably have to be waterfowl hunting.
Really?
And I would choose that because I love being on the water. So you know, I could, even though you don't need to actually, you know, have a boat or anything to go duck hunting, it still would allow me to actually be on a boat.
Right.
And, you know, get some helm time in on the water, and but mm-hmm. at the same time get to do some duck hunting, you know, which is what we do down here in the Lower Laguna. But you know, be it that we, you know, are fortunate enough to, you know, have permission to hunt on some private lands, I mean, those are just walk-in hunts, you know, and you don't yeah. actually need a boat to do it.
That's
but yeah,
awesome.
It was definitely waterfowl hunting is definitely the way it would go over the fishing. As much as I love to fish. Yeah, it would have to be waterfowl hunting.
Right. What about you, Jose?
Oh, man, dude, it's so hard. I'm more invested in fishing simply because of where I'm at. It's just more easily accessible, and I genuinely do like it, but I'm not going to lie. So Canoe and I think we started waterfowl hunting around the same time. We had another friend mm-hmm. of ours kind of show us the ropes, and we both fell in love with it.
2013.
Yeah, we both fell in love with it, but he went, like, all in. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. and yeah, I agree with him. If I had to pick like one type of hunting to do, it'd be waterfowl. Like, I love waterfowl hunting. It's just really cool to see the birds work. It's really cool, mm-hmm. especially if you have a bird dog, like he had his dog Sai. I mean, it's really cool to watch them work and see them get excited. And it's just different. I don't know how to explain it. I love waterfowl hunting, and if I had to choose one hunting to do, it'd be that. But between hunting and fishing, I would probably say fishing, just because right now at this point in my life, it's the thing that I can do the most. And I'd mm-hmm. rather spend time in the outdoors doing something than nothing, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I'd go fishing all the way. If I had equal access to both, it'd be a way harder decision.
Right. Right. See, with me, I've never really been much into hunting. It's something that I didn't grow up doing. Like, I grew up fishing. I didn't grow up hunting. It was just me and my mom growing up for majority of my childhood, and she didn't know the smallest thing about guns. And so I never really had anybody that got me into it until me and Jose started hanging out, like, after high school and stuff. And that's when I started getting into dove hunting. And I love dove hunting, and I've only been deer hunting a handful of times. Used to go do some hog hunting, and that was fun. But the majority of the hunting that I've done has been dove hunting. So if I had to choose between the two, it'd most likely be fishing. But I do want to get more into hunting. Like, I have, you know, a deer rifle, and I have a compound bow, and I have shotguns and stuff. So I want to get more into it. I have the guns to do so. And there's some really good, you know, deer hunting here in the National Forest here in Arkansas. I just haven't been out there to do it. So I need to get out and do more, but, my experience with hunting so far has mainly been dove, which was awesome. And I used to have a Catahoula dog, and he was my little bird dog. I love that little guy. And I got him, I think the first time I took him out hunting was in Seguin area, and he was, must've been 6-9 months old. And, I started getting into, you know, sick, because I had another dog. I had a dog that was a chocolate lab German shorthaired mixed, and she was a good bird dog. And so I just pretty much had him out there with her, and he was young at that age where he was just pretty much wanting to play with the birds. So I was trying to teach him not to crush the bird and actually bring it back, but he picked it up quick. And then I took him twice that season, and then the next year I took him, and by that time I didn't have the black lab anymore, or the chocolate lab German shorthaired anymore. And so it was just me and him, and he killed it. He did a great job. And so he was my little bird dog, you know, from that point on. But yeah, dove hunting was my main form of hunting. So
nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the hunting. I think that's the hunting I started out doing.
Really?
Was dove hunting. I guess because, you know, as a little kid, you know, it's, you can't just, you know, be waking up with your little kids, you know, at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning to go, you know, deer hunting or duck hunting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, down here, you know, when the season opens up, we got that special white wing, mm-hmm. Which the hours shooting light, you know, shooting hours start at noon. You know, so it'd be more of a, you know, kind of a barbecue and a hunt kind of a day.
Right, right.
When I was a kid, that's one thing I remember was the smell of the mesquite and the smell of, you know, burnt shotgun hulls. And, yeah, that's one of those smells that you know, you get a whiff of it, and you're not even out hunting, and you smell that mesquite or whatever, and it just instant memories. you know,
right. Just takes you back.
Looking back on the years, exactly. Yeah, and I think, man, you know, Texas is kind of, that's kind of a, you know, at least the outdoor population, you know, it revolves around, you know, this next weekend that's coming up in September, that first weekend, Labor Day weekend. That's what what this whole state revolves around. You know, dove season gets here.
Yeah, it's like it should be a Texas like holiday. I mean, everybody. Right?
I agree.
And it's kind of funny, man. Like, I feel like a dove is to hunting what a bluegill is to fishing. Like, a lot of kids go and catch bluegills, and like that's how they get kind of quote unquote hooked. And same thing for dove, because you don't have to be, you can be loud, kind of, you know, they don't really hear you, they more see you, but it's more of like a social thing, you know, I know people who, like, on the weekend of dove hunting, they'll go down to ranch, whatever, and they'll have like a big like party, barbecue, whatever, and they'll go out hunting for the afternoon, then they'll bring the dove back, they'll clean them, they'll cook them right there, and it's just like a big party, man. And I don't know if they still do, but I know in Kingsville, the last few years, they used to have a Fiesta de la Paloma or something like that, like a big party revolving around. Wow. Yeah, a big party, like a big fiesta, whatever, revolving around dove hunting. It was pretty awesome, but especially dove hunting in South Texas. It's super popular, man. And I know for me, kind of like you, Canul, like I think that's the most, like, that's the kind of hunting that I did most, like, more than anything else, growing up and through college and stuff like that. But dove hunting is a lot of fun. I look for, even though I don't get to do it as much as I used to, I still look forward to it every year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's something that's, you know, anybody can do it. You know, especially, you know, in Texas now for quite some time, you know, there's actually public land access, you know, which is kind of, you know, unheard of, especially when you think about Texas. It's like, what? Public land in Texas? But yeah, there actually is some public land, which we took advantage of when we were in college.
So I never really understood how that worked. Do y'all know, is that something to where like Texas Parks and Wildlife gets a hold of landowners and leases the property from the landowner, or?
If I'm not mistaken, it's something like that.
Okay.
So there's different types of public lands. Like there are leased units where Parks and Wildlife will lease a unit for the sake of hunting. And then there's like WMAs, wildlife management areas, and different things like that all around the state. And you have to be careful when you are entering a public land because the regulations are different. It could be different from like one WMA to the next. It could be different from species to species. It just varies. So you have to be really, really careful about where you're going to go hunting. Like, read the map. And actually, Canul and I have we hunted together when we almost got in trouble one time. And because of that, and so and we can talk about that later, because we were actually dove hunting too when that happened. But like, yeah, man. And you can go into Parks and Wildlife. They have like an interactive map, and it'll show you the different locations of public lands all around the state. And then it'll show you like the different rules and regulations. Like, some places you can hunt with guns, some like for big game, like whitetail deer and all that stuff. Some places it's shotgun and archery only. Some places it's small game only. Some places like you can only hunt from this date to that date and nothing else. Some places are draw only. So there are a lot of public lands available in Texas, but they don't all operate the same. So if that's something you want to, so if that's something you want to do, you just have to be really careful about how you go about doing it and make sure you abide by, you know, the specified rules and regulations for that location. But at least for dove hunting, for dove hunting, for the most part, unless it's outlined in those particular units, they more or less abide by the rules and regulations set forth by Parks and Wildlife. So like Canul and I mean, we used to hunt a lot of public lands in South Texas when we were going to school in Kingsville, and there was still like the same bag limits, the same days, as the rest of the season. And I don't even think we had to wear a hunter orange or anything like that in those locations, because they were migratory birds. And so, but yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. You just had to show up, like sign in, if you will, and it show like how many birds you shot, how many birds you saw and all that stuff, and check out. And, that's pretty straightforward. And South Texas, like, those public lands are actually pretty good for dove. We had a lot of success hunting those locations, and it was a lot of fun, man. We look forward to it every year. Sometimes We were actually talking about this before we went on, before we actually started the podcast, but we would oftentimes, if we didn't have class that day, we would go hunting in the morning. And sometimes even if we did have class that day, we would still go hunt in the mornings, and we would either skip class or we would show up to class late and usually covered in feathers or something. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we know where these guys were. And then we'd wait till the end of the day and then we'd go back to go hunting. And then usually we'd go back to we had a friend who was living in an RV park, and we'd go and barbecue or grill the birds there afterwards and just hang out and stuff. It was a lot of fun, man. Some good times.
Yep.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's what we used to do. We get up and we do the early day hunt. And then afterwards, I go to my buddy Dalen's place, and we go out there and hunt on his property. I think they had 100 acres at that time. And so we go out there and we just dove hunt right in front of his property, and we grill him up right away. Or I would go with my brother's father-in-law to some lands over there. I think New Braunfels area, Seguin area, somewhere of the two. And he grew his own jalapenos and stuff like that. And so we'd go and make some dove breast poppers with some bacon, jalapenos, cream cheese, dove. And so we'd, right when we got back from hunting, clean them, and I'm there on the grill immediately. So good.
There you go. Yeah. That's the other thing too. That's the other thing is, you think of dove hunting immediately, jalapeno poppers.
Yep.
First thing you think of.
It has to be the most popular way to cook those things.
Oh,
the
best way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, we used to get them, and I'd make up a mix of brown sugar and chili powder, chipotle powder, and coat it in that. Oh, so good.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I think Christian, he used to get the breast, and he wouldn't put a jalapeno in there, but he would just wrap the breast in bacon. And then I think he would put a little bit of barbecue sauce or something on there and grill that. Mm-hmm. And that was really good. That was really good, too. Yeah. That was really good, too.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I can remember my grandmother. She would take, she wanted the whole breast. She wanted the breast, not deboned, just the way it is. Just take the skin and the feathers off, cut the wings off. And she wanted it just like that. And she would make kind of like a arroz con pollo, but it was with dove, And man, and it was just to die for. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah. That sounds really good.
I don't know why I've never thought about that. That sounds so good, dude.
And just really good. And she did, Mexican rice and then the whole dove breast in there. And I mean, the way she would cook that dove breast, she would put it in a slow cooker, the dove breast. Mm-hmm. And the meat would just fall off the bone.
Yeah.
You just pick it with a fork and it would just instantly just start falling off. And it was so good.
Man, y'all making me hungry.
Dude, so Kanul and I had some friends. I don't know if you remember this or not, Kanul, but we had, through the course of the season, we had shot quite a few birds, mm-hmm. and they had quite a few left. What they, if I vaguely remember, I believe what they ended up doing is they ground down a lot of the fillets off the bone into essentially what was hamburger patties. Like ground burger. Mm-hmm. And then they would make hamburger patties and they cooked them like a hamburger. And I wasn't there to try it, unfortunately, but they're like, dude, it was actually really dang good. It's like, that's pretty
cool. It takes a lot of doves to actually do something like that because of how small they are, But I don't know if you, there's another time we actually made some dove jerky. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember.
Somebody had a dehydrator. It may have been Christian. Had a dehydrator, and we dehydrated some of it, and that was really good.
Dust really?
Sticks. I mean, that was yes.
Yeah, I've never had. I don't think I've ever had any type of bird jerky. I mean, I've had all kinds of crazy jerkies, but I don't think I've ever had bird jerky, chicken or turkey or. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had turkey sticks, but not turkey jerky.
yeah, that's Dove is actually very, very good, dehydrated like that.
Yeah.
As a jerky, it was really good.
That's awesome. I might have to try that. Dude, I swear I need to get out there and freaking dove hunt. I haven't been dove hunting in, dude, it's probably been probably the better part of 8 years. Like, it's been way too long. And then I just went and bought another shotgun this year. It's like, I have two shotguns and I just need to get out there and do it. I bought the shotgun because it was a good price. And I do want to try to get out and do some duck hunting. but I need to get out and do some dove hunting. I looked it up, and our season starts September 2nd, same day y'all's does. So,
okay, how about that?
But to,
I might have to.
To be fair, you tried to go with me one time in South Texas. That didn't pan out too well.
Dude, that weekend was some BS. It was like I was finally off work on the weekend because I used to work for AT&T and I used to work weekends. And Jose was, I think you were getting your master's at the time, weren't you?
I think I was still.
Maybe it was your undergrad.
But like the later years, like junior or senior year.
I see. And so I was always busy on weekends and he was in school and it was just time never really worked out for me to make it down there very often. And I finally got my schedule changed to where I was off on weekends. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I'm going to go down there. We're going to go do some dancing. We're going to do some hunting. We're going to watch some football. Cowboys were playing that weekend. Longhorns were playing that weekend. And everything's going to be great. Well, we're going to get up. We're going to hunt. We're going to fish. Like, we're going to do everything. And then, so I drive down there and you're still living with,
you know, it was my master's because I was living with my two roommates.
Yeah, you, that's right.
You crushed Izzy. You crushed at our place. So it was my master's, my first semester of my master's.
Yeah. And so, so we get up and it's like piss pouring rain outside. And we're like, oh, this freaking sucks. And so we just waited. And we're like, okay, well, we're not going to go fishing. And we're like, well, we'll just go dove hunting. And so we wait out the rain and we get out there and we went to some public land over there, kind of close to Kingsville. I don't remember where it was at. And we get out there and there, we didn't see crap for birds. Like, I think we were out there for a few hours and saw maybe two birds and they were flying a mile high. And we're like, man, this hunting freaking sucks. And we're like, well, I guess we'll just head back a little early and, you know, watch some football. And we get over there and Longhorns were doing decent that year. And I don't remember who they were playing. They were playing like Oklahoma State or something. And it was a game that they were supposed to win and they lost. And me and Jose were like, man, this is some BS. Like, whatever. And so then we went out that night. We're going to go dancing. And the bars were just, I mean, it was fun, but
they're like dead.
I think that was the trip. Yeah, they were dead. And like Jose couldn't even get a glass of water.
Yeah.
Like the lady walked up to him. Oh, and she's like, can I get you something? And he's like, yeah, I'll just get a glass of water. She said, okay. And turned around and walked off and never came back. Like, she intentionally did it.
What happened? What actually happened was, so we did go to the bar. I was DD, so I had like one beer and then I was going to just drink water the rest of the night. And so that lady did come up and she goes, and she's like, y'all want anything? I was like, yeah, I'll take a glass of water if you don't mind. And she turned and she looked at the bar and she's like, nah. And she walked off. And we like looked at each other. We laughed. We thought she was just joking around. But she never came back. We're like, dude, this chick was for real. So I had to go to the bar.
Oh my goodness.
So I went to the bar, got my own damn glass of water. And yeah, dude, it was a mess. And so the next morning, I think Russell ended up just leaving. And then I happened to have gone hunting that afternoon and I think I shot my limit. And I sent him a picture of the doves. He's like, son of a bitch. I knew I should have stayed.
Yeah. It was stupid. Well, so we woke up and it was an early morning game. The Cowboy game was an early morning game. And so we woke up and we watched the Cowboys game and the Cowboys were getting the shit kicked out of them. And so I left. It was like third quarter. I said, dude, I'm just going to head home because I lived like 3-4 hours away. I was like, I'm just going to head home. So I'm driving. And I guess Jose had got like not too long after I left, had gone out. And then I couldn't have been an hour down the road. I think I don't even think I was to Karn City yet. And he sent me a picture of his limit. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I didn't have to go home. If I would have known that the hunting was going to be good, I would have freaking stayed.
Oh, my gosh. He was holding out on you wherever he went. He went somewhere that he didn't take you.
Actually, I did go somewhere I didn't take him. But I didn't know it was going to...
Oh,
I didn't know
man.
Gonna, there you go.
I didn't know it was going to be good, dude. That's the thing about public land hunting. There's like some days where it's freaking awesome and other days where it's just crap. But
right.
I mean, I guess that's just hunting or fishing in general. But dude, I was like, damn, Russell, that sucks.
Hell, there was that one time that we went out and I want to say it was in somewhere by San Marcos. We went to some public land and we did really well. And then we went the next day and we didn't see one bird. We were out there for 4 hours, did not see one bird. It got so boring that we were like literally picking up cow patties and skeet shooting with them. I mean,
oh my goodness.
And it was hot and I mean, it was just miserable, but we stayed out there for like 4 hours and didn't see one bird. And we're like, well, I guess let's go ahead and start packing up. And then I had preluded to this previously in an episode about how almost killed us to do with a wasp. So I guess I could tell this story. Yeah. So we get back to the truck and we open up all the doors and we're, you know, cleaning our guns, putting our guns away, putting our shells away. And there was these two wasps and they'd flown into the truck. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, doors are open, they'll fly out. And so we get everything put away. And we go, and I see one of the wasps fly out, and I see the other one like by the other door. And so I just assumed that both wasps got out. And so we close the doors, we get in, we're driving. And we were, you know, probably, I don't know, maybe an hour away from his place. And we went to his place, hung out for a few hours, and then we were leaving. And I was just pulling out of his mom's area, because we were at your mom's house, right?
No, dude, we were leaving the Dove Field. We were still on the road.
Because I remember it had been a while, because I figured the wasp had would have died because of the heat.
That, yeah, so what happened was those wasps flew in when we got there, when we were getting everything unpacked.
And we were like, that's what it was.
We'll deal with it when we come back. So we stayed out there for a few hours, didn't see any birds, and so we got back in the truck to go home. And when we opened the doors, one flew out. But we didn't see about the other one.
And so what happens? So we get in the truck and we're driving, and I pull out, and this was whenever like a lot of that police brutality stuff was going on. And I was like, I'm going to do a social experiment, and I'm going to act like a jackass, and I'm going to record it. I'm going to act like a jackass on one and not act like a jackass on the other when I get pulled over. And you can see the difference on how you treat the officers makes a big difference on how they treat you, because I'd been pulled over numerous times. The following years for stupid stuff. One was like a blinker was out, and one I was speeding, and then another one we had like a convoy of friends going to one of my buddy's show. He was playing a show in Seguin, and they were just being nosy. It was like 2 a.m. We're leaving a bar, and then we're going back to a house party, and everybody's pulled off the road, and I was like, had two tires barely on the road, talking out my passenger window to somebody else, finding out where we were going, because I was following them. And he pulled me over because I was obstructing traffic on a back road outside Seguin at 2 a.m. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm obstructing traffic. But I was respectful and all. And I'd never, like, they just always said, okay, well, don't do that. Like, I'd never even got a ticket. So I was like thinking in my head, I was like, well, you know, it depends on how you treat the officer and how they treat you. And I was telling Jose this, and I was like, well, I'm just going to do it. And I said, one time I'm going to get pulled over, I'm going to be respectful. You know, I'm going to record how that interaction goes. And then another time I'm going to, and right when I said gonna, that wasp flew out of nowhere and flew inside my sunglasses. And I was wearing Costas with like the steel cable on the back. And right when I said gonna, it happened. And I was like, ah, fuck. And I started like freaking out and like hit my glasses off my face. And Jose thought it was part of what I was going to say. And he's like, what the hell? Like, you're going to say that when the cop comes to your window? And then he grabbed the steering wheel. I'm about to drive off in the ditch. And he's like, what happened? And I was like, dude, a freaking wasp. And it like flew in between my eye and the sunglasses. And I was just like freaking out. I broke the steel cable off the glasses. They flew across the truck. He grabbed the wheel. I was about to drive off the road. It was like, what the hell just happened? But yeah, I pretty much almost killed us because of a freaking wasp.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
All because you were dove hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was right. That's exactly what it was. Is I was like, well, we were out there for so long, and it was, you know, over 100 degrees that day, or probably close to 100 degrees. And I was like, with all the doors and windows shut, like, those wasps have to be dead. And that's right. One of them flew out, and the other one, I guess, was behind the seat or whatever. And yeah, scared the hell out of me, though.
Oh my! It could have been worse. Could have been snake.
Right. So I finished telling him the story about the wasp thing, and then he said that you remember all the details, which is freaking true. Which brought up the story that you'd brought up earlier about when y'all almost got in trouble. What story was that?
Yes. Yeah. So this also has to do with public lands, and this is why I say always pay attention to the rule book, pay attention to the maps and the boundaries, and don't trust anyone that you meet on public lands, because you don't know if they're telling you the truth or not. So there's this piece of property Canoe and I went to go check out in South Texas, not too far from Kingsville. And it was just he and I. And so we get there and we check in, we look at every public land place, they have a little photo of the property, the boundaries and whatever. It tells you where to hunt, where not to hunt. So you got to kind of have like a basic understanding of the lay of the land and how like maps and stuff work and all that stuff. But we, you know, it wasn't our first rodeo. We knew more or less like where the boundaries and everything were. And a lot of times they'll have them marked too. So we went and we picked a spot, and we were hunting, and there was just like these guys on this corner, and they were wrecking shop, dude. Like, they were just blasting those birds. Mm-hmm. And there was a bunch of birds, we could see them, and then me and Canoe looked at each other like, dude, isn't that like an illegal spot? Like, isn't that outside the boundary? And we could have sworn that it was. And so we moved a little bit closer, but we were still within the boundary. And when that guy, he finished his limit in like 20 minutes. He came and he was walking out, and we caught him on the way out, and we're like, "Hey man, so how's the hunting over there?" He's like, "Oh dude, there's so many birds. I got my limit like 20 minutes. They're still flying. If y'all want to go and try and get some." And we're like, isn't that like outside the boundary? He's like, "No man, if you look at the map like this, you can see that it's perfectly legal, dude. Just, you know, go over there and shoot some birds." You're like, I mean, all right. So me and Kanur are like, "Let's go, dude." So so we went.
I remember now.
We walked over there, and sure enough, bro, we were whacking them. We finished our limit in like 20 minutes. And mm-hmm. so we're walking out. We're going back to his truck, and it just so happens that a game warden is walking up, walking into the unit. And it just also just so happens that Kanul knows this game warden, because at that point in time, he was doing some ride-alongs and trying to get some more experience and stuff, because he wanted to go into the game warden academy. And so he knew this guy personally. And so he's like, "Hey, man, what are you doing out here?" He goes, "Well, it was my day off, but I caught a call saying there were some guys who hunting dove illegally out here. So I came to check it out." And then we're like, "Dude, we haven't seen anybody really. I mean," and he goes, "Yeah, one of the guys who called it in said that they were driving a white truck." And Kanoa looked around and goes, "Well, the only white truck's the one that I'm driving, and it's over there." He's like, huh. Let's go talk over there. So we walk over to his truck, and he looked at the license plate, and he just like drops his head and he shakes his head. He goes, "Dude, they were talking about you." And we're like, "No." And then Kanul, he looked at me, we looked at each other, he looked at him, he's like, "Hey man, how long have I been doing ride alongs with you? You're like, you know I would never do something like this. Like, I'm trying to get into the game academy. You know I'm all about the rules. Like, I would never go out and do something like this." And luckily the game warden was a super cool guy. He goes, "Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, I know, dude. I know you wouldn't do that." And he goes, "But I gotta make it look like, you know, I'm giving you guys a stern talking to, because there's a dude, one guy sitting in the field over there." And and he was just looking at us. So yeah, so the guy, I mean, so we did end up having we did have a good conversation. You know, a very beneficial conversation, because he was asking us questions like, "Is there anything that I could do to make the boundaries more noticeable so this doesn't begin and stuff?" So we ended up walking the property with him, and we showed him like where we were. We showed him, and we were going over like where the boundary is and all that stuff, and coming up with ideas of how to make it more noticeable so it doesn't happen to guys like us. And so that was like if it wasn't for Kanul knowing this guy, for sure would have got a ticket. For sure.
And lost our bird.
he let us keep the bird. Yeah, just keep them. Just make sure you don't ever do something like this again. We're like, "All right, it's cool." So we ended up, we did. We left. I don't think we ever went back to the unit. At least I know I never did. And if I could self-nominate for Jack Wagon of the Week, because I knew better, bro. I knew better. I should have trusted my gut and not trusted that guy, but I did. And so ever since then, man, like, I've always just been like paid extra attention to the booklet. I never believe anything these guys coming off public land say. And I don't think he meant it with ill intention. I just don't think he knew.
Yeah.
That or he didn't want to know. Like, the hunting was so good, he just tried to like justify it in some way that it was in fact legal, but it just wasn't.
So do y'all know who called? Do you think it was that guy that was out there in the field? Or
I think so.
It could have been. I tell you what though, this is the other thing. He said it was his day off, that game warden. It was his day off. And I bet you what happened is somebody, if it wasn't the guy that was already there who called, it may have been somebody who was passing by, or maybe the landowner whose property that was actually happening on. And the other thing that could have happened is whoever was driving by saw that call, and they actually saw those other two guys over there hunting. And the game warden asked, "Well, do you have a description of a truck?" And they said there was probably two trucks at the time, and he gave a description of both trucks.
Yeah.
And so since it was his day off, by the time he can get all his stuff ready to go, hop in his unit and get out there, because it was at least a 20-minute drive to that spot probably from town. So by the time he got out there, we were the ones who were already there. So of course it was us, you know, by the time he gets there. So it could have been somebody calling about the other guys, but you know, we just happened to be the guys in the right place at the wrong time. You know,
that sucks, man.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a good, that's a good point. Yep, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah.
That's freaking and, well, good thing y'all didn't get, you know, a punishment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that one warden, leave his name out of it, but he was that guy. Absolutely. If I would have been on a ride along with him, absolutely. Tickets would have been written. Birds would have been seized. And two hunters would have gone home very, very disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that he cut us a break. And absolutely. He made me feel like, wow, that was really stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and really, we weren't really. And the only thing we were doing was if you do think about it, we were trespassing. Yeah. And trespassing with a deadly weapon because we had a firearm.
Yeah.
We were on somebody else's property. And what it is over there, there's no fence lines because it's all farmland. So, this 100 acres or whatever, however many acres it is, you know, that chunk of dirt right there is somebody else's, you know, property. And, that's the property line. So without that place being marked, you know, correctly, it's very easy to end up, you know, a foot on the wrong side of the property line.
Yeah.
Right.
And the crazy thing too is, so when we went with the warden to walk the property, they were just marking it with like little flags, and some of them were like knocked over, so you couldn't even see them. So, so we're like, he's like, I need to find a better way to mark this. So it's unfortunate that, like Canelo said, we were the wrong guys in the right place. But at the same time, there was something good to come of it.
Right.
But yeah, dude, if it had been any other warden, if I would have hunted with anyone else other than him, I would have got a ticket, and so would the other guy that I went with.
Yeah.
So it was just crazy how things happen. But yeah, dude, it was wild, man.
That's
And that particular warden, I did a lot of ride-alongs with him. I did probably, probably close to 150 hours worth of ride-alongs with him up to that point. So I built a relationship with him, you know, a good friendship with him. As a matter of fact, I still talk to him to this day. He's still in Clayburgh County, if I'm not mistaken. And it's kind of funny, you know, now, like, thinking back then, like that was what I wanted to do. I'm going to be a Texas game warden one of these days. And 6 applications later, you know, I never got in. I always make it to the selection for the academy, but I would never get selected. Mm-hmm. And then I wound up, you know, going the route I did and run into them every now and then. And as a matter of fact, I've even got to work with them, you know, in my capacity and them as game wardens. And it's kind of cool, you know, it's like, man, if it wasn't for these guys, like, I wouldn't have got, you know, my foot in the door. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do the things that I did professionally now. And it all started then because they're the ones who allowed me to go ride with them, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, there was definitely some officer discretion involved in it as far as, you know, his decision. And I'm sure, you know, the fact that I built a good friendship with him probably helped us on that one.
Yeah.
All right, that's awesome. Well, at least something something good came out of it too. So do you know if there's been any change on how they mark property like that because of that?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I have not set foot on public land like that since I left Kingsville.
Oh, really?
That's just if I'm not hunting with Jose Mata, I ain't setting foot on public land.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing to be said about.
I haven't hunted public land since. No, I take it back. I have hunted public land since I left there, but I haven't hunted that particular unit. And the place that I was at, it was more well defined. Like it was just a singular property, and it was fenced, so you know
Yeah.
As long as you're within that fence, you're legal. Like, you're good.
I see.
There was one stipulation, like they had a barn out there and you couldn't hunt within like 150 yards of the barn or something like that. So I mean, that was the only thing. But as far as like how it is down there, I have no idea, man. No idea.
That's great.
And I don't even know if there's, I think there is some public land down here where I'm at, over in Cameron County towards outside Rio Hondo, between Rio Hondo and the Arroyo City area. I think there is. I want to say it's called like Las Palomas WMA or something like that.
I see.
But I mean, like I said, you know, I haven't set foot on any public land since I was in Hugo.
So when is y'all's dove? So I know y'all's first set of the split starts September 2nd. What are the other dates for y'all's dove season there?
I have no idea. If I remember correctly, the way it's been, like I said, you know, I haven't even opened up the outdoor annual at all this year. Just been so busy with work and I really don't even worry about dove hunting until the regular season opens. And the regular season, I want to say regular season opens up towards the end of September. And it runs through October, sometime through October. And then there's actually a point where it closes it sometime in October, and then it reopens the last half of December and into January.
Yeah. Do you know when it closes by chance, Jose?
I don't, not off the top of my head.
Because I'm thinking if it closes at the end of October, we should go do some dove hunting when I'm there at the end of October.
Yeah.
Hey, if y'all want to come down.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, because here in Arkansas, dove season closes October 22nd. Well, I plan on coming to Texas October 20th. So if it's the same, we got to go because I got to go.
Yeah.
We'll already be in South Texas. Well, we're talking about going to South Texas to go fishing, right?
Mm-hmm. Gonna try to.
Yeah, which would be on the 20th. Well, would be on the 22nd.
How South Texas are you talking about?
I don't know. Jose knows one of the listeners that offered to take us fishing. I know we're going to stop in Rockport,
that'd be him. That'd be Canoe.
He offered it. You're talking about Canoe. How about that? Wait, we will come to you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm hoping we'll have my boat back up and running. Mm-hmm. Right now in the works of trying to get a new lower unit for it.
I see.
We formed some stress cracks on the lower unit between the prop and the gears on the lower unit. So it's actually in the exhaust portion of the lower unit. But the further forward it goes, it's going to crack into one of the seals, and then water's going to leak in there. So the boat hasn't been on the water for probably 2 months now.
I see.
But the boat is 7 years old and it's got 1,000 hours on it. So
damn it. You put some use on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We've been about 2 oil changes on it, which is every 100 hours. So
yeah,
about 2 oil changes every year. So do the math.
That's crazy.
Over 100 hours every year that we put on that thing.
That's awesome. And,
this is the biggest issue that I've had with it so far. And, you know, thank God that it's taken this long for something like that to come up. Unfortunately, it's out of warranty. The warranty the motor had a 6-year warranty, and the warranty expired last March, I believe, is when it expired.
Damn it!
So yeah. So
well, if it's not up and going, man. I mean, hell, I'm down to come down there and do some dove hunting if it's still.
Oh yeah. Well, the other thing is, you guys, you also have kayaks?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. I've got one too. So
awesome. If, I know Jose was talking about maybe selling his, but I got two, so I could bring them both if he ends up selling his.
Yeah. We can definitely, at the very minimum, put the kayaks on the water if the boat's not up and running by then.
All right. Yeah. I'm down for that too. Dude, that would be awesome. Freaking get up and do some, maybe early morning mm-hmm. redfish on the kayak and then do some afternoon dove hunting. Shit.
Yep. Absolutely.
Speaking of
Castle West, though.
Have y'all seen mm-hmm. the new Bonafide that's coming out next month?
No.
Oh, you show me.
Oh, dude, it's a skiff style kayak. So it's a bona fide SKF 11.7. It's 11-foot 7-inch skiff style kayak, which, you know, obviously me and Jose are fly fishermen more than conventional, so line management's a big thing. And this is, it's like a platform on top, and there's like nothing your fly line can get hooked on. It's a little bit of a wider set body. Dude, it's, I want one so bad. It's,
sounds like it's made for shallow
water. Yeah, dude, it's hot. It's a sweet freaking kayak. I think I'm debating on selling my Jackson to get that one, and then I'll just have two bona fides. I'll have one for my kayak camping, and then like my SS 11.7. Then I'll have the skiff style for fly fishing, and I think it'd be good for the coast too because it's a little bit wider. So
absolutely,
I don't know. Yeah. I might have it by that time. I might just break down and do it.
Then you'll have to bring it regardless,
right, dude? I cannot like go to a trip on the coast and not take it. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it'd be freaking awesome. So Jose, would you be down for going and doing some dove hunting if it's still dove season when we go down there?
Hell yeah, dude. I haven't done any dove hunting in ages. Too long.
Hell yeah. As I was telling him when you got kicked off previously, that I think it's been the better part of 8 years since I've been out dove hunting.
Damn. Wow.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's been too long. I need to get out there and do it. So
you guys are talking about the towards the end of October.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll see. I'm gonna put some leave on my calendar for work, and I mean, I'm off Saturdays and Sundays, but I'll throw in some annual leave like on Friday and Monday. So I have 4 day weekend.
Sweet. Yeah, it would be the weekend of October 21st. So we'd probably be making a trip down there on the 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long are you planning to be down?
I'm not sure. I don't know about him, but what I was planning is I was planning on going to like the Central Texas area on Friday on the 20th. And then okay. We have that event on the 21st in New Braunfels. And then the 22nd, we were hoping to go down there. And then we had tossed around the idea of maybe going to Houston on Monday on our way back up. And he could just take from Houston to College Station. I could go up 59 and hit the highway to go into Arkansas. To do some fishing on Monday in Houston. So it would mainly be Sunday and then Monday morning is what I was thinking, but we don't have anything set yet. So
cool deal. Yeah. What I'll do is I'm hoping the boat be up and running by then. And I'll use those couple of days that you guys won't be here. I'll get out on the water and just kind of go look for some fish that way.
Hell yeah.
Hopefully, yeah, I can't promise anything, but hopefully we can, you know, be where the fish are.
Right. So. Dude, we can have a little cookout if we get into some slot reds and hopefully get some dove. Dude, that would be some redfish on the half shell and some dove poppers. Gee.
Absolutely. I tell you what, though, if we don't catch any, I've got plenty of half shell in the freezer right now. So.
Sounds good.
We will definitely eat.
Bro, and that's the other thing that was so awesome about living in South Texas. I mean, there was never any, I mean, there's like maybe like 1 month where we couldn't do anything. So we would dove hunt. And then when dove hunting season ended, it'd be getting cold. So we'd go duck hunting on the coast. And then by that time, or by the end of that, it was usually the end of the semester. So everybody'd go wherever on break. Come back in the spring, maybe if we got back in time, we'd catch a second split of duck. And then after that, the drum, black drum would be running into the bay. So then we'd start fishing for black drum and stuff like that on the piers or whatever. And then when spring started rolling around and the water started getting a little warmer, dude, we'd go like every weekend to Port A and we'd go fishing for reds and trout and stuff pretty much to the end of the school year. Mm-hmm. So there was like, we were always doing something every weekend, man. It was freaking awesome. It was badass.
That's freaking awesome, man. Dude, I love going down to the coast. So I used to go down to Rockport quite often. My family has some property there, and so we go down there and we go fishing on Copano Bay or make the trip over to Port A. I freaking love the Texas coast.
Yeah, it's definitely there's nothing like it. That hypersaline environment is it's amazing. I love it. It's and fortunate enough, I get to work in it every day, and I'll never get enough of it. I'll never get enough of that salt water. It's where, you know, the only place that I can go where just everything just goes away and it's just you and the salt environment. And it's very therapeutic.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
That's how I feel about water in general. I mean, I obviously don't get to the salt water too much now that I'm up here in Arkansas, but dude, just being on the water in general, whether I'm fishing or just kayaking or swimming with my kids or camping near the water, like, that's one thing that I love about my area is there's so much water mm-hmm. everywhere. I mean, we got Lake Hamilton, we got Lake Catherine, we got Lake Washita, we got DeGray, we got Lower DeGray, we got, you know, the Washita River, the Caddo River. Wow. It's like all within 30 minutes of where I'm at. So we got plenty of water around for me that it just is my safe place. That's where I get my peace of mind. Awesome. So it's freaking yeah, awesome. Exactly. Man. It is very therapeutic.
Exactly. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Jose, something that just came up, where Russell and I were, he had asked me if you and I had met in college, and I told him, yeah, we did, but I can't remember how, and it was going back to how I was telling him that you remember everything, and I promised him that you had a story on how it was that we met.
I do, actually, yeah.
So don't let me down.
So this was, I believe it was freshman year. I want to say it might have been, I can't remember if it was the fall or the spring, but one of the first guys that I met, his name was Zach. He's actually a listener of the podcast, so shout out to Zach. We used to do a lot of fishing stuff. No, it was the first semester. It was fall semester because I don't think he came back for spring. Maybe he did. No, he did come back, but not for, anyways, my bad. So he lived in these dorms, and it was one of those kind of dorms where like you shared a room with somebody. And so I was hanging out at his place. Canule lived right across the hall from him. And I don't remember what happened, but we just like, you just came over one day or your door was open or something. We just started like talking and stuff and hanging out. And then inevitably, and this was like the ag dorm. So like everybody in the ag dorm like hunts and fishes or at least likes it. So inevitably the topic got to there and we're like, oh yeah, man, we love fishing. So then we just like, and then when we started going to the fishing, there's a fishing club too. And the Walleye Society also on campus. And so we just started like going to those things. And then we hung out, we had a lot of classes together. So we just ended up like hanging out and fishing and stuff all the time. And yeah, man, I met you at those dorms. And I lived in in different dorms, but I was like always there. And you guys would come over to mine from time to time too, hang out, get coffee or whatever, or study, and then we'd just go fishing and hang out. That's pretty much it, man. We would also, I don't know if you remember this, Canule, but whenever we'd catch fish, we'd go clean them in the bathrooms.
I was just thinking about that.
Dude, so we'd have we'd have like a cooler full of fish. We'd have nowhere to clean them, so we took them to the bathrooms, man. And we would like
there's a big sink, big counter in there.
There's a huge counter in there, so we would get those like Clorox wipes, and we would disinfect everything, and then we would throw the fish in the shower and run the shower to get the slime and stuff off of them. And then we would get them, and we'd just lay them there on the countertop, and then we'd try and do our best to clean up afterwards. Like we'd get some more wipes and some soap and stuff, and like clean it off, but you know, scales get everywhere inevitably. And so I guess the custodians got really tired of it. And so one day we were going to go walk in there to go clean some more. And it had a sign on there saying no more cleaning fish or whatever. So we're like, shit. so we started cleaning them on the tailgates of our trucks in the parking lot.
Yep.
Damn it.
I'm surprised we did not get in trouble for any of that.
Man. Oh, dude.
So did y'all have communal bathrooms in the dorm?
Yeah, dude. That's
that dorm is.
And then people will come in, they're like, oh man, nice fish, dude. Where'd y'all go? And they're just like walking in there. They
it was normal.
Care. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
They did not care, bro.
The dorm that I lived in, we didn't have communal bathrooms. We just had, so you shared a room with somebody and then you shared a bathroom with another set of two other people. So we had, they were like our suite mates. So you had your roommate and then you had your suite mates with an adjoined bathroom. So that's how the dorms were that I was in.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Dorm life is interesting.
That was.
It is
that
for
was
sure.
Very interesting.
And I think you lived by yourself. I think you lived by yourself, Canule, because there was like,
yeah,
you put the two beds together, and then I remember you had like you had all your fishing stuff in like one part of the room, and then we would always watch what is his name? Blair Wiggins, Addicted Fishing, whatever. We'd always watch
Addicted Fishing.
Yeah, we'd always watch the shows on your laptop in your room. And you had the Blair series of Wright and McGill rods too, the real like nice blue ones, whatever.
I did.
Yeah, I remember all that stuff.
Yeah, I still have four of those.
Do you?
I still have four of those. Yeah, those are my cut bait rods that we use whenever we go out in the bay and just anchor, and like whenever it's me and my wife and my daughter, we'll just anchor and I'll just chunk cut mullet on circle hooks with those four rods, and we'll just sit there and it's surprising. You can actually catch some redfish like that, and you'll even catch some trout doing that too.
Really?
And two of the biggest trout that I've ever seen. I didn't catch it. I took my grandmother's cousin. She had come down from out of town, and her husband came with her. And my grandma asked if I could take them fishing. I said, absolutely, I'll take them fishing. So we go fishing. And the darndest thing, I got tired of catching these dang hardhead catfish. So I take this one hardhead catfish. It's a dorsal fin. I cut it, just cut from the dorsal fin, just straight down, chunk the dorsal fin, pectoral fins, and the head in the water. And I fillet this hardhead catfish like if I was actually filleting it to eat it. Kept the skin on and then cut it into about four chunks. It was a decent sized hardhead. And I put these hardhead fillets on the circle hooks and I threw it out there. And the rod goes down, a few minutes later. And I give it to my grandmother's cousin to her husband. And I was like, wow, man, this is a nice redfish. And so he starts reeling it in. And then all of a sudden, the fight just kind of isn't there anymore. And I'm like, don't tell me it's a trout. Because I felt the weight of the fish. I felt the head shake. And for me to think right off the bat that it was a red, if this thing turns out it's a trout, this thing's huge. Sure enough, he gets it by the boat, and I net it. We put it on the check-it stick to measure it. 31.5-inch speckled trout.
Holy no crap, shit. Dude.
On cut hardhead.
That's freaking crazy.
Yes, on cut hardhead.
Dude, I don't think I've ever caught a speckled trout on cut bait. That's freaking crazy.
Yeah, I was beside myself. I was like, wow, that was so. Took photos of him with it and whatnot, and actually released that fish.
Mm-hmm.
It was just such a like big. It's like they say, big trout. They're rare.
Yeah.
That beauty went right back where she came from.
That's freaking awesome, man. What did he think about it? Was he over the moon?
Oh, well, this is the thing. They were from New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only trout that he's ever caught were German brown trout, rainbow trout, cutthroat trout.
Yeah.
And up there in New Mexico, unless you're fishing like on the Rio Chama or something like that, it's just a bunch of little streams.
Yeah.
And so, the fish, those cold water fish up there, they don't get that big when they're in the little streams.
Yeah.
So I think, biggest rainbow trout he caught was probably maybe pushing 20 inches or something like that.
Yeah. And so to catch speckled trout was 31. I bet he's freaking excited.
Yeah. Yep.
That's freaking awesome. That's
it's kind of funny. It's funny how a speckled trout actually kind of resembles a rainbow trout, with all the dots they get, specks that they get on them.
Yep.
And then when the sun hits them just right, they have like this, these iridescent colors.
Yeah.
That kind of resemble the rainbow trout colors. It's amazing. Yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
So, but I've done some fly fishing up in New Mexico, as well. You're talking about you guys, y'all are fly fishermen.
Yep.
I like to do that as well.
Nice. Yeah, we went up to Angel Fire, New Mexico, and fished the Cimarron up there. And it was a good time. But when we were leaving, we passed, what is it? Is there a, what was it, the Red River or something like that that we passed? I'll say that we said we were going to fish?
Mm-hmm. On the way back?
Yeah.
It was the Rio Grande.
The Rio Grande? God, dude, that looked like some good freaking water to fish.
Yeah.
We need to make a trip up there again and go. But yeah, we fished the Cimarron up there, and then we fished Eagle Nest Lake, and it sucked because it was so freaking windy, and we were fishing from the bank, and the wind was blowing so hard at us. I couldn't even get my fly more than 5-10 feet out, and I could see big pike out there. And I was like, I just need to get to these freaking pike, and I just couldn't get a fly out to them.
Wow.
Yeah, it was some good fishing up there. It's gorgeous too.
Oh, New Mexico is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Didn't you do an elk hunt up there?
Land
also?
Of enchantment. I did. Yep. So, long story short, my grandparents on my mother's side, my grandmother from Corpus Christi, and my grandfather down here from Edinburgh, they wind up meeting in Jemez Springs, New Mexico. They were both the PE coaches at Jemez Springs High School on the Indian reservation there, the Jemez Pueblo. That's where they met.
I see.
So long story short, we would always go back every summer after they had moved back down here, long before I was born. But we would go back every summer for quite some time to go visit their friends from the Jemez Indian reservation from the Pueblo. And one of my grandfather's ex-baseball players, he was Jicarilla Apache. And he told my grandfather, hey, I'm an elk hunting guide on the Jicarilla Apache Indian Reservation. If you ever want to come on an elk hunt, you let me know and I'll take you, coach. And my grandpa, you know, he said, oh, he's, I'm not in the shape that I used to be, you know. He says, but my grandson, you can take him. And so he said, all right. He said, let's set a date. And he was dead serious. So we set a date and it was for a cow elk. And we went up, I think it was December 2012 maybe, or 2013. And hunting in, you know, negative 12 degree weather and, you know, foot and a half of snow. And that was the only time we were able to go. So it wasn't really a spot and stalk. It was more of a, you know, driving around and you know, kind of spotting them from the truck,
yeah,
then getting out and kind of putting a little bit of a stock, and then we came back with about a 600 pound cow elk.
That's freaking awesome.
That was amazing. And I'll tell you what though, like mountains up there like that, they're, you know, known for their elk, but I'll tell you what, the mule deer that are up there, holy cow, there are some monsters up there. And I wish I had the shoulder mount, but it's at my grandparents' house. But my grandfather shot a world class mule deer up there.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that mount
at the house.
That thing is massive, dude.
It's massive.
That's freaking awesome.
It is massive. And so my grandfather, he actually recently he passed away. January, I'm sorry, of last year. And my mom just told me the other day, she says, hey, you want your grandfather's mule deer mount? And I was like, what, really? And she says, yeah, I she's like, I just don't have room for it if you want it. And I said, absolutely. So
that's freaking cool.
I just gotta go pick it up so I can put it on the wall.
That's freaking awesome. Man, well, sorry for your loss, but I mean, that's something that you're you can always look at that and remember the memories. That's freaking awesome.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I appreciate it, guys. But he lived one hell of a life, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He lived a great life. So.
Yeah, when we were up in New Mexico.
I met him before. I've had the good fortune of meeting him a few times. Really awesome guy, man. Really, really cool dude. Really nice.
But yeah, when we were up in New Mexico, we saw a bunch of mule deer, but they were all small. We saw a bunch of juveniles, a bunch of does. I saw one buck that, I think it was maybe a 4-pointer. He had a small rack, there were some massive bodied mule deer, but that was all right there by the resort. We didn't see any. Well, I didn't see any when we went out and about, I don't think, but we saw a bunch of them right there by the ski resort.
Wow. Yeah, I worked with a guy in college. He was from somewhere in Sonora, Mexico, and his family had a big ranch down there. And they have a guide service, and their big thing down there is coos deer and desert mule deer. Mm-hmm. And knowing what he knew about mule deer, I showed him a photo of my grandfather's mule deer that he had shot up in New Mexico. And, you know, for that guy, the expression on his face when he saw that mule deer, I was like, wow, so this deer is something special. and he looked at it and he said, man, he said, you know, knowing what I know and being able to kind of judge, you know, how big that deer is just by looking at it. He said that thing is well over 200 inches. And, you know, as far as antler mass, yeah.
Damn.
I've never measured it, but
that's freaking crazy.
It's got something like, scorable points. It's got something like 26 scorable points on it.
No shit. That's freaking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's freaking
awesome,
though.
Are you going to get that thing measured at some point?
I would like to, yes. I would like to know exactly how big it is.
And was that from a from a guide up there?
Or, no. Or was... He shot that in their backyard. Not literally in their backyard. Where they lived in New Mexico. And it's all basically, especially then, because he shot that in 1960-something, I think. My mom was a little girl. My mom remembers it. But my grandfather, he would literally just walk out the back door and start hiking the mountains. And and he shot that thing somewhere back there in the mountains up there in Hemis Springs.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so cool. That's something that I've always wanted to go do, is just go, and even if it's not for an extended period of time, but just go spot and stalk and hike, like hunt up in the mountains, because it's so much more of a challenge to go do something, for one, in a terrain that you're unfamiliar with, which I'm unfamiliar with the mountains. But just to, I mean, it's you and nature, and it's based upon your skill on how successful you are. And I've always wanted to do that.
Yep. Yeah, there's I mean, they don't call New Mexico the land of enchantment for nothing, I'll tell you that.
Right.
Yep.
That's very true. But still one of the prettiest sunrises I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
You talking about that first morning when we're out there drinking coffee?
Yeah. So it's like, I think it was like 14-hour drive from Kyle. So we left early in the morning, but we made a pit stop in Roswell. And then by the time we got to the cabin, it was already dark. And the sun set early. I think sunset started like at 4:30 or something like that. And so it set really early when we went. So we didn't get to see what anything looked like. We got there in the dark. So we just unloaded, unpacked. We were all really tired. So we just went to bed.
Wow.
The next morning we woke up, and it was like a three-story little cabin. So I walked down to the little balcony they had. And I just stood out there, and dude, we'd seen the sun come up over the mountains, lighting up the pines and stuff. Oh my God.
Absolutely.
It was just one of the most breathtaking things I've ever seen. The best cup of coffee I ever drank, just to be there and see that, man.
Yep.
And it was like 16 degrees, but I was out there in basketball shorts and a sweater. It didn't even feel like it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I love New Mexico, man. I fell in love with New Mexico when I went.
It's crazy how the temperature difference is, you know, in New Mexico than it is. Like, if it's 16 degrees in Texas or 16 degrees in Arkansas, I'm wearing three jackets, four pairs of pants. But up there, it's just brisk. Same thing with Central Alaska. You know, when you're on the coast, it's a little different. But in Central Alaska, I mean, it's just brisk. You know, it's negative 20 and you're out there in a sweater and pants. And, you know, if you're out there for an extended period of time, physically it's cold, so it'll get to you. But just to, like, you know, walk out and get the mail or whatever, or just, you know, walk to your car to go somewhere, it's just, it's so refreshing. It's like walking into a nice cold beer cooler in the middle of summer.
Nice. Wow. Not a South Texas.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'd be looking for one of a heat lamp or a rock to go lay on, man.
Right. Well, I guess we're probably coming up on time. So is there anything else that you want to talk about or anything you want to cover before we go ahead and get ready to start closing it out?
Dude, we gotta have Kano come back for duck hunting, because we got so many stories. Hey. We could talk for forever.
Say when.
We should for sure.
Absolutely.
We didn't even get to talk about the time we found that abandoned vehicle on that.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that's a good story. That's a good story. Yeah,
well, tell it. You can't tease us like that.
I think we got some time. So we won't say the landowner's names. And this is dove hunting related. So we had permission to hunt two properties. We were going to one of them. Really, it was owned by a really nice gentleman, super nice guy. He didn't have any problems with us going. So one day we're going down this valley, this little farm road, and his property butted up right against that road. And to our knowledge, we didn't really know of anybody else having permission to be out there. So when we were driving, We happen to look into his pasture and we see a black SUV sitting there, but it was like out in the middle of the pasture. Just looked odd. You know, usually if you're going to hunt some like dove, whatever, you want to at least park your vehicle under some trees or something, you know? And Canoe has always had like a really keen sense for like things being off or not quite right. So we got that, we got out there and we started loading up our guns, getting ready and everything. And then, and he's like, dude, something don't feel right, man. I just don't think he's supposed to be there. So he ends up calling the landowner and told him, you know, what was going on. He's like, all right, yeah, I'll be out there in a minute. You boys just, you know, go have fun, whatever, go hunt stuff. So we left and we went to go get set up. And, so we're just there hanging out, under some trees, whatever, waiting for the birds to start flying. And the landowner comes around and he goes, checks out the SUV, and then he comes over to where we are. He goes, yeah, I've never seen this vehicle before in my life. He goes, and it's still on, and it ran through my fence. He goes, yeah. So I called the police. They're on their way. You know, I'd really appreciate if you guys can just hang tight. They might have some questions for y'all, whatever. Like, yeah, you know, sure, no problem. So we were just, you know, while we were waiting for the police to show up, we were just going to hunt and stuff. And so we were there, and then one cop shows up. And he kind of walks over to the SUV. He's checking it out. And so I put my gun away. And I think Canoe put his gun away. But we were hunting with another friend of ours. He did not.
Nope.
and so there's this bird. And, of course, it's flying right at us. And I was like, dude, don't shoot that bird. I told that to our friend. He goes, and I see his gun come up. And he just takes a couple shots. And I was looking at the cop when this happened. And when he heard the shot, he put his hand on his pistol and he like wheeled around, brought through my hands in the air, canoed through his hands in the air, and Christian. And he starts yelling at him. He goes, hey, quit your shit, put it up, whatever. So we, pardon my language, but Christian, I was like, Christian, what the hell is wrong with you, dude? I told you not to shoot. He goes, man, I came here to hunt. I couldn't let the cop stop me. I was like, oh my God, bro.
Absolutely.
I was like, we could have died, man. And so the cop, I mean, he was like, he made a joke about it. He ended up being pretty cool, but yeah. I mean, dude, you're going to some ranch. You can't see us. We're in camo. So yeah. And you hear gunshots. I mean, it'd make anybody jump.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
Can't blame him.
Absolutely.
And, but yeah, so he starts asking us questions about the expedition or the SUV, all that stuff. And then next thing we know, Border Patrol showing up and then they come out and they're asking us questions. And, so we're just there hanging out at the vehicle and they finally come over to us and like, yeah, so we ran the plates and it turns out this vehicle was stolen out of Houston. It was involved in a high speed pursuit earlier in the day. And we believe it to be ditched here. And we think it was carrying some, I think it was some illegals, whatever, yeah. And the passengers who stole it are considered armed and dangerous. So he's like, so if it'd probably be a good idea for you guys to get out of here. So we packed up our stuff, and then the landowner and his son were actually working on fixing their fence. Yeah. So we ended up going over there and helping them fix their fence. And then we just left, man. And we don't know what happened to the vehicle or to the – well, I mean, I don't know what happened to those vehicles – or to the guys that were driving it, but we're like, what the hell, dude? It's just another day in South Texas, man. You never know what you're going to see when you're dove hunting, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that's freaking crazy.
So that was absolutely what that was. That was absolutely a botched smuggling event is what happened there. Yeah, so our dove hunt turned into a fence mending day. We helped them fix that fence to a fun one down. And that's actually why we ended up leaving, because mm-hmm. We couldn't shoot anymore, you know? So, yeah.
Well, y'all did a good deed, but that's freaking crazy, man. What if y'all got there just a little bit earlier and they came through while y'all were out there?
Oh, man.
Dude, that could have been bad news.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, knowing what I know now.
That's freaking crazy.
At least we would have had some guns.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've seen plenty of fences, run through and whatnot in my time with, you know, when I was with the Border Patrol and whatnot. So one thing that's kind of interesting is when that happens to a landowner, if the owner of that vehicle doesn't want that vehicle back, the landowner can put in a claim to actually have that vehicle signed over to them and they can keep it.
Really?
Yep.
Hmm. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I would assume that most vehicle owners would probably want it back, but
yeah, yep.
Exactly. that's crazy though. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I remember one time I didn't either. I remember one time we were camping down in Port Mansfield, And the spot where we were camping at was right next to the channel. And it was me and my buddy Mike and some of his friends. We went out there. We were there for a few days. And the spot where we were at, it was like a 3-hour driving on the sand to get to it from the last beach road. And they all had Tacomas. And there was a few times where we'd pass, you know, buried Chevys and buried Dodges and, you know, bigger trucks that were getting stuck because the sand was unpacked. And these Tacomas are so light, we're just going through them. So we get down there and we set up camp. We're fishing out on the jetties and whatever else. We come back and it was right as the sun started going down. And on the other side of the channel, we see another vehicle pull up and start flashing his lights 3 times. And we're like, what the hell? Like, does somebody need help? Like, we're like, oh, well, I mean, we're not swimming across the channel. And I mean, to be able to drive over there wouldn't make sense. So we just kept watching them, like, making sure, like, hey, is everything okay? And then out of nowhere, we see this little Explorer. It's like a 2-door, beat to shit, 4 different color Ford Explorer come flying past our campsite and pulling up right on the channel, like right by the jetty, and start flashing its lights. And we're like, what the hell? Like, how'd they even get here? Like, it didn't look like it was 4-wheel drive. It was a beat up freaking SUV. We're like, what the hell is going on? And then next thing you know, we hear a bunch of footsteps to the right side of our campsite. We look over and there's 5 guys just soaking wet coming out of the channel, running through the dunes, ran straight through the middle of our campsite, jumped in the SUV, and they just hauled ass out of there. And we're like, I think those are illegals. Like, they just came running through, but they literally ran like between me and my buddies in the trucks. It was freaking crazy.
Dude. Man. That reminds me of one of the funniest stories I remember. Like, I won't say the name of the ranch, but Canoe and I used to work on this ranch. We did it for one summer. And and there was one day that, dude, it would be so hot. You do like working out there, man. I think one day there was like with the heat index, it was like 130 or something like that. And it was just brutal, bro. So there was one day, and usually we would eat lunch in the field, but we had a real bad heat wave, and we ended up just going back to the bunkhouse where we were staying just so we could cool down, man. It was so hot. And there was one day we were at the bunkhouse and Canoe and I were in the kitchen making like a sandwich or something. And we hear a knock on the door. And there on the ranch, it was rare that people would knock because we were the guests. You know, they would just, if they needed something, they would just kind of like walk in, whatever. And the door was always open for the most part. And so we just kind of looked at each other and we opened the door. And there's this guy that we'd never seen before just standing there. He was all tatted up and whatever. He had a little backpack. And I mean, his shirt was like ripped. He was all sweaty and stuff. And you could tell he'd seen some better days. And he starts talking to us. He first started in Spanish and then he started talking to us in English. And it turned out this dude was a coyote or whatever. But he didn't – we assumed he was a coyote because he asked if we had anything to eat or drink. And so we offered him some chips and some Gatorade, whatever. And then he's like, oh, I could pay you guys. And we're like, nah, man, don't worry about it. It's all good. And then he was telling us a story about how he's trying to get to his wife in Fafurias and all this stuff. And then he's talking about how, and then later on in the conversation, he's talking about how, yeah, I just came up here to check things out because my wife is, you know, behind. I'm waiting for her and stuff. And there was just a bunch of inconsistencies, but we weren't about to call him out about it. We didn't know what he had in that backpack or anything. So
we just
let him talk. And then eventually we just closed the door and he was hanging out on the porch in the shade. And me and Canoe were like, what the heck, dude? Like, this guy is kind of sketchy. And so we're just kind of watching him through the window. And then I remember Canoe used to keep an ice chest in the back of his truck at all times, but it was chained down. And and he always had ice in there. And he would keep like Dr. Peppers and stuff. And that was like he would always come back from work and get like a Dr. Pepper or whatever, like a treat. And, dude, I remember this guy, he starts looking into our trucks and then he like inside and then he notices Canoe's truck had that cooler. So we see him hop in the bed of the truck, pop open the cooler, and then he takes some stuff from the cooler and he starts walking down the way. And so the ranch like protocol was that if we have any encounters with like illegals, whatever, we were to report it to them and then they would then report it to Border Patrol. So we reported it to them and they're like, all right, well, just hang tight. Border Patrol will be there. So they want to ask you guys some questions, all that stuff. We're like, all right, cool. So we hung out there. It was a nice break from the heat. We didn't mind. So we just stayed there and just hung out, relaxed a little bit. They ended up showing up and they started asking us a bunch of questions and we showed them like where he went walking and all that stuff. And then, And then as they're walking away, Canoe goes, he looks in his cooler. He's like, that son of a bitch took my last Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, damn it. No respect.
Dude, he was so mad. He was livid. And so the Border Patrol guy's like walking down, or like they're walking down, and Canoe's like, oh yeah, and if you find him, tell that guy I want my Dr. Pepper back.
Yeah, that was something else.
I love it. That's freaking hilarious. Dude.
Yeah. That's the Damn. Most Texas thing, man. Come on.
Right? That's disrespectful. You don't take another man's last Dr. Pepper. Don't matter who you are or where you're from.
That's what we're saying, man. You remember that, Canoe? Dude, that was hilarious.
I do remember that, man. What's funny is not long after that, I end up being stationed with the United States Border Patrol there in Hebronville. So those same guys that were out there, I wound up working with those guys. That was fun.
That's
never, crazy. Never would have imagined it.
Small world, man. That's wild.
Yep.
That's freaking nuts, though. Dude, it's crazy. Like, you don't hear about a lot of the stuff that goes on in South Texas, you know, from the media or anything like that. But it's a common occurrence from what I've experienced.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's a saying that was going around. I'm sure you've heard it before, that in Texas, there's two kinds of ranches. There's those that have hogs and those that are going to get them. Mm-hmm. Well, right now, the past couple of years, it's turned into the two kinds of ranches are those that have illegal aliens and the ones that are going to get them. That's what it is now. And
I've never heard that. That's crazy.
It's something else. Yeah.
Man. How is the hog population there? Is it getting any better, or is it still causing a lot of hell?
Oh, I'm sure they're wreaking havoc still. But yeah, I'm really not much of into shooting pigs.
Yeah.
So we do have stories about that, though. On the same ranch,
oh my goodness.
Back in those days, we were allowed to, I think they since tightened up the rules a little bit, but we were allowed to carry firearms. And they said, if y'all see any pigs, shoot them, because they were, would do like helicopter hunts and stuff like that, trying to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So like, if I see any pigs, just shoot them. So we would sometimes after work, if we had enough sunlight, we'd go sit like at a water tank or whatever, and we would hunt. And he actually had his grandfather's 243, and we've got a few, but the craziest one, I don't know if you remember this, Cano, but there used to be a little RV. It was like for overflow. So if the bunkhouse was too packed, people could go stay over there. And so Canoe and I would stay over there sometimes, and we would alternate. Like, someone would sleep in like the master bedroom or whatever one night, and then someone would sleep on the couch, and then we'd sweep, flip flop, whatever. And one night Canoe was like, dude, did you hear all the, or one morning he was like, dude, did you hear all the hogs last night? I was like, nah, man, I didn't hear nothing. I didn't believe him. And so, cause I was in the master bedroom, whatever, it was like, I don't know. I just didn't hear it. So the next night we swapped. He went to the master bedroom. I was on the couch. I woke up one night and I could hear, and I heard a bunch of noise. I looked and there was a bunch of hogs just rooting around. So I went, I woke up Canoe, and he said, dude, just shoot them. So I didn't want to shoot through the window, like the little mesh stuff, whatever. Yeah. And so I found out that you could slide it up. So we slid it up real, real, real quiet, and we stuck the barrel, the 243, out there. And I just picked the closest one that I could, and I shot, and they all just scattered, and we couldn't really tell if we got it or not. So we just went back to bed. Next morning, we wake up, and dude, there's a hog just laying there like 16 yards from the window. So I used to have a photo. I don't have it anymore. Canoe took it. There used to be a photo of me with the hog, and then it was the RV in the back, and there was like a little arrow pointing to the window that I shot
it out of. I remember that, man.
Yeah. I'll tell you
what, that's funny. He sticks a barrel of that 243 out the window. And I'm there with my hands over my ears because I already know that this is about to be the loudest gunshot I've ever heard inside that, because the barrel was barely out the window.
Yeah.
And that thing went off, and oh my God, the shock wave from that, the barrel blast from that freaking, from that round coming out of that muzzle. Oh my word. It shook the inside. Even though it's a small round, it shook the inside of that trailer.
Dude, my ears were ringing. I kind of Yeah. I kind of regretted doing that because it hurt, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, could you imagine if you had like a 300 Win Mag or a 30-06?
Oh, screw that.
Oh, my gosh. Blown the windows out of that.
And then the next morning, I think there were some fence workers or something there, and they were staying in an RV next to us. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, I thought we heard something last night, but we didn't know what it was. And I think they ended up taking that hog, or at least the backstrap or something out of it. They're like, oh, do you want it? I'm like, oh, I mean, not really. If y'all want it, y'all can have it. No, we're just trying to help out the ranch because they had a real bad hog.
Yeah, it was.
I know at one point they had like bounties on stuff on hogs, didn't they?
There were some counties. I remember reading something. There were some counties where if you took like an ear or a tail or something like that, they'd give you like $5 or something like that. I can't remember.
That's crazy.
But yeah, dude, the hog problem is so bad, man. I mean, and it's crazy. Like, people will do helicopter hunts, and even that doesn't like dent the population at all. I mean, it really is an ecological disaster, bro. It's freaking nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy to see those the footage from helicopters at nighttime with infrared cameras and just seeing hordes of like hundreds of pigs down on the ranches and stuff. Like it's crazy.
Yeah,
there's definitely a lot.
Yeah, dude, it's so bad. It's so bad.
That's nuts. Dude, I haven't been hog hunting in a while. But I mean, yeah, I'm not kind of like, no, I'm not real big on hog hunting. I mean, the meat's not all that great. It's okay.
I actually really like it, dude. I've had some really good hog meat.
And then I like them when they're like 100 pounds and less, but they get above that. I've never had the best experience. Ones that I've harvested actually, you know, I mean, I'm probably not doing it right, but they just taste gamey to me.
Yeah, they are a little gamey, but you're right. They do taste good. It's all how you cook it, man. Especially Jose. I mean, he's the master chef over there, you know. So.
Right.
If he cooks it, I'll definitely eat it.
Dude, hopefully soon we'll be having some guests that are chefs, like actual chefs, and some that actually cook wild game a lot. Dude, I'm excited for that because I'm a little guy, I'm a fatty inside. I love me some food.
There you go. Heck yeah.
Dude, there's a guy named Jesse Griffiths. I'd love to try and get him on. I know somebody who knows him, so maybe we can make it happen. But he wrote a book specifically on wild hogs. It's all about like butchering them, all recipes on wild hogs. It's an entire book dedicated solely to the processing and cooking of wild boar.
Really?
It's friggin', yeah. I actually have a copy. My friend won it. So that guy, he was a guest speaker somewhere. I think it might have been a Stewards of the Wild event in Austin. My buddy went, and that book was one of the prizes for something. I forgot what. And he won it. And he actually got the guy to sign it. And he also got one of my somebody I knew, a professor at Kingsville who happened to be there. He actually signed it as well, and he gave it to me. So I have the copy of the book in my room. And I don't mess with it too much. It's very sentimental, very special to me. So I just kind of keep it there. But it's a pretty cool little book, man. The pictures are fantastic. The illustrations are great. I mean, it's pretty awesome. So I think it'd be really cool to have Jesse come on. And he also did a meat eater episode with Steven Ranella in South Texas.
Oh, wow.
They did a two-part episode. You can see it on Netflix. I forget what season it is. But one episode is all geared towards saltwater fishing, and then they did one where they went nilgai hunting in South Texas, and they cooked it up there too. And I mean, that guy can throw down on the stove or on the grill, whatever, man. He's an awesome cook, so hopefully we can get him on. I think that'd be dope, but we'll see.
That would be, dude. You should take a picture of the book and send it to me. I'd like to read it, look over it, but I will put the title of the book in the description and maybe a link to it. And then I'll also put in the description what episode it is, because I'm probably going to go and watch that tonight. I love watching Meat Eater, so I'll go find it, and then I'll put that in the description too, let y'all know what episode it is.
Yeah, when I get back to College Station, I'll take a photo of the book, and we can put it on Instagram.
Sweet. Day to work.
Perfect.
So we're coming up on time, man. It's been a pleasure having you on, Knoll. I'm surprised I've never met you before, because me and Jose have been friends for so long, and you and him have been friends for so long. So it's nice to officially virtually meet you, and hopefully we get a chance to hang out and go do some hunting and fishing in October.
Absolutely. I appreciate the invite, guys. And anytime, I'll join you guys whenever. Y'all just say when.
All righty, man. We appreciate it. We love having you on. So I'm sure there'll be some more episodes for you.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Another waterfowl episode or something.
Right. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. We will do that.
Heck yeah. So, we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on. And for the listeners, man, thank y'all for listening to the end. If y'all have any questions, comments, concerns, anything like that, feel free to hit us up. Thank y'all for listening, and we'll catch y'all next time.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.